In order maybe to see kind of where we're headed, they may ask you a couple of questions, each one of us, and you don't have to blurt out the answer unless you want to say this, but can you remember a time when you were called on to attend to the task or to function in a certain way or to serve in a certain situation, and you had to do it knowing there were people who did not want you doing that? You had to do it in the presence of people who did not want you doing that. Do you remember any situation like that? I think of it in a minute. Nobody is saying, yes, I do. Is that totally unfamiliar to you? Have you ever had to go back and re-attend to a situation after someone has criticized you or rejected you for what you tried to do? Okay. So what if you were in this picture here? Gaius has been receiving those who are on missionary journeys in behalf of the gospel. He's been showing them hospitality. He's been sending them on their way with help, and he has been receptive to their and supportive of their message. But Diotrephes has forbidden him from doing that, or has tried to do so. Demetrius now is going to be the ones who are being sent out, and he's going to be sent to a place, or at least through a place, where he will apparently, he's carrying a letter where he's, I think Demetrius may have been carrying this letter, where he's going to go to a place where he knows there's a guy there who won't even let such letters be read, and who has forbidden other people to be receptive to their presence or supportive to their work. And John is writing to a guy who is writing to a place where there is a guy who does not acknowledge his authority. And to further complicate matters, it is instructive that this Diotrephes, who does not regard John's authority, there's nothing doctrinally debated in this little letter. There's not anything about what Diotrephes is saying faith-wise that is even mentioned, or that's amiss here. This is one of the situations where the problem we're dealing with is not a doctrinal one. Have you ever run across a church problem like that? I would say a whole lot of them are like that. That's just my experience, though. I haven't been everywhere, as you guys know. But I think this is, in that way, more practical than we may at first realize. There is one leading quality about each of these characters, and then three things that each of the characters is said to be doing or is said to need to do, all right? And without writing them all down, I ask you to look with me here at this. First off, Diotrephes is a man who loves in truth, if we can say it that way. He is a man who has been doing a faithful thing by letting his love be known before the church in his efforts for brothers who are strangers. That would be verses 5 and 6. His efforts for brothers who are strangers are the ones that I've suggested are carrying the gospel of other places. Pardon?
You're talking about Gaius.
I'm talking about Gaius. Excuse me. Did I say one of the other guys? All right, you guys are in for a long morning. Gaius, I'm talking about this one here, all right? The second one now is the Diotrephes, and he is the man who in verse 9 says likes to put himself first. Gaius is a man who likes to put his guest, his stranger, first, the truth that he holds first. The Diotrephes man liked to put himself first. And then we're going to find out that Demetrius is a man who has who does good. All right, that's the mix. One likes to put his guest first, one likes to put himself first, one likes to put what's good first. Say it that way. Now, there are three things that we can find out that these guys are doing. First off, let's look at Gaius again in verses 7 and 8. And you notice that he will do well to send these people on a journey like he's been doing, because they've gone out, first they've gone out for the sake of truth, they don't have support from unbelievers, and third, we're fellow workers for the truth of these people. All right, that's the thing we've said. Now verse 10 and along in there, you notice that verses 9 and 10, Diotrephes does not acknowledge John's authority. He refuses to welcome brothers. A part of his not acknowledging John's authority is talking wicked nonsense against us at the end of verse 10. And then third, he stops those who do want to welcome the brothers and to help them. And we've tried to say that welcoming the brothers is more a technical term for being involved in their mission by hospitality.
Just a quick question. Do you think all three of these gentlemen were they elders in this very particular congregation at one time?
There is more likelihood, I think, that these two are leaders in a congregation. The usual suggestion is that possibly both are church leaders. And the third one is one of the men who is a brother who is on the way in behalf of the gospel to carry the gospel there and beyond.
He's just kind of warning the third one about the second.
Yeah, right. He is writing to this one, talking to this one about what this one has been doing that's improper and what needs to be done with regard to this one. Okay. Now, it's not a situation where you say, all right, in order to keep church in the peace, Gaius, let the Diotrephes have his way. Diotrephes doesn't want Gaius there, or doesn't want Demetrius there, so Gaius, in order to get along with the Diotrephes, don't let anybody come and talk to you. And the reason, what he says is the basis for that is love for the truth. Remember how often we found that out in the first verses of this book, love for the truth. That's the thing, love for the truth, truth and love, all right? And what's faithful, what's good, what's right. And then what he does say is keep on doing the good you've been doing, and let me recommend to you this brother here. So it's not a situation where he says, Gaius, it's going to upset Diotrephes, so don't do anything. On the other hand, it's not a situation where he says, none of Diotrephes' concerns are appropriate, so welcome everybody who comes along, no questions asked. Second John already told us that. Instead, if you know somebody is walking in the truth, then it's a faithful thing to help him in his work for the Lord. You'd be a fellow worker with the truth in that way. Now that brings us to verses 11 and 12. And let's look at these for just a moment here. Scott, would you mind to read those two for us, 11 and 12?
Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good. Whoever does good is from God, whoever does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. We also have our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true.
All right, now you'll notice here that Demetrius is under consideration in this little prayer. What to do about Demetrius? So what is John saying to Gaius in verse 11 when he says, "Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good"? What is he talking about? What do you think he means?
I think he's saying don't go along with what Diotrephes is trying to promote here.
All right.
In his evil ways.
Yeah. Don't imitate this behavior here. Do imitate the faithful things that have already been done and you've already seen and heard about. And you notice in this, in the ongoing work of the church, the idea of imitating what is good is important. There has to be the recognized practice of what is good. And that should be seen in mature and faithful Christians. And then there is the safe imitation of that. It's not always simply, do what I tell you. You notice that it is imitate what's good. The ability to recognize the difference between good and evil should be the outcome of knowing the Lord and growing in the Lord over a period of time. It's otherwise known as wisdom. The ability to recognize the difference.
This little book brought my attention that these three individuals, you cannot just find it only on the denominational world, but also in local congregation. I think all of us have something of each of those individuals. And I think when sometimes we might fall into the one in the middle, that we have the elders and deacons to correct us, just like John in verse 10 talks about him come. He's not coming over there to condemn them or to punish them. He's coming over there to remind them the truth.
Yeah, John does say, I'm going to come over and I'll help deal
with it. Right, yeah. It's not like a threat.
But you're saying here, I'm probably not just one or the other of these guys. I may have some tendency of each one in me. I think you're probably a pretty good doctor in that way, Louise. That's probably right. There are temptations toward each one of these. But in practice, in this case, these three guys are doing certain things. John's approach to which family we're living in is consistent throughout the Gospel of John and in 1 John especially. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God. The practice, the continuing practice. Now, I'm not reminding, John chapter 8, there's this conversation that happens and Jesus talks to the Pharisees and others who are questioning him about their being, having the devil as their father. Y'all remember that? The devil was a murderer and a liar from the beginning, John says. What did he mean by that? How was the devil their father?
Because they follow what they
were. They were acting like he did, not like God the Father does. In 1 John, especially in 1 John chapters 2 and 3, 4 through 6 and chapter 2, we're not going to read all the passages. That would be to redo what we've already done. But then in chapter 3, chapter 3 of 1 John, for example, you could be like Cain. How could you be like Cain? You could hate your brother. That could be your practice. see. So that the way John evaluates things is a practical matter of not simply what is said to have been believed, but what a person does. Whoever does good is from God, and whoever does evil is not. Now, remember that that's not the only thing. In 1 John, we found out, all right, you need to also be listening to the truth, practicing it, and you need to be morally doing what's right, and you need to be socially loving your brothers and sisters in the Lord. So this is one of the tests here. Now, turn our attention to Demetrius. In the context of this book, I'm convinced that he's one of the brothers in verse 5 who is being sent on his journey, on their journey, the end of verse 6. All right, you see that. Now, Demetrius has three things that John says about him. What's the first thing you see by way of introduction and endorsement of Demetrius? First way of John's telling Demetrius is one of the good guys. All right, he says, first, Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone. What does that mean? Pardon?
Others speak highly of him.
Others speak highly of him. All right. So what you have here is a reference letter in a way, right? And the reference letter is saying of Demetrius, people know him and recognize him as a faithful brother. Okay? Now, one of the principles for congregational life that needs to be thought about here is, would it be appropriate then for, before we just simply agreed to help someone in what sounded like a good word, for us to check and find out whether this brother is well spoken of by everyone and known to be a faithful brother? Yeah, it's appropriate. That's not unloving. That would be in keeping with this passage. What's the second thing that's said about him? He has a good testimony from everyone, and what else? All right, he has a good testimony, understand that I'm still saying that, a good testimony from the truth itself. What does that mean to you? All right, he is walking in keeping with what the Lord's word says, right? What he believes and how he lives is in keeping with the truth of the gospel, right? So that would be a part of this. So there is a testimony from those who know him, a testimony from what you know. All right, and then the third thing, what does Demetrius have?
John.
All right, John says, from me also, or from us also, I'm going to use the me because I think what Alan said is right, from John also. We also add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true. This, by the way, this last phrase is John's, a hallmark statement of John. In the Gospel of John, I think it's chapter 21, maybe verse 24, this disciple whom Jesus loves it speaks, and you know our testimony is true. And then in 1 John, you find this also in chapter 4, especially the testimony being true. And then 1 John chapter 1, if you remember, he went through the long deal of what we've seen and what we've touched and what we've heard and all that, we proclaim to you, and this 1 John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. So trying to emphasize that he knew what he was talking about and he knew it to be true. So this would be what everybody who knows this man, then what the Lord says, and then from the one with authority, in this case, the Apostle John himself.
All right.
So John would have said this to Diotrephes about Demetrius, but what problem would there have been? Diotrephes doesn't recognize John's authority. So John will have to come to this place and deal with that himself. Now, what endorsement would you need in order then to go and work in a situation where you knew somebody there did not want you to be doing it? Or where someone has criticized or will criticize what you're doing? What do you need in order to keep on with the work in that situation?
You need the support and the recommendation of other brethren.
You need to know that good brethren are on your side, that they're for you, they've sent you. All right, what else?
Make sure that you're walking in the truth.
You need to know you're doing what the Lord wants you to do. And what else?
To me, it would be one of the hardest things to have on myself. And I actually felt to my brother, or have my brother, or allow my brother to try to correct me.
All right.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that we deal with.
All right. All right, I agree with that. Before I forget to do this, I want to point out, everybody needs some more experienced mentor.
Recommendation from the elders of the church that you came from.
All right, very good, Alan. That would be, in effect, what this would be. You need to know that you have the support of mature Christians who are aware of your work and who are supportive of it. Leadership is exercised by taking the initiative to do this, which is what John is doing in this letter, all right? So that's the thing. Now, let's stop here for a second and see what kind of comments maybe you guys want to make or what kind of points or observations you might have. How would this kind of interaction work? There's someone like John who knows the Lord's work is the priority, who can deal with these three types of characters and keep the work being done. But there are also three characters who, at least two of these, are going to go ahead and do what they know the Lord wants them to do, despite the presence of one who's hard to deal with. All right? And these other two don't let one guy who loves to have the preeminence just cancel it all out.
Well, one of the things that evidently Gaius is not doing, he is not engaging in an argument with Diotrephes.
Not through this letter.
He seems to be going ahead and doing what he knows is right without letting Diotrephes, like, rule him or run over him.
Gaius is going to have to trust that John is capable of coming there and dealing with the Diotrephes. He's going to have to let him.
John is not actually committed to coming.
No, he said he's going to try.
Places, if I go.
Yeah.
And I hope to see you shortly.
Yes.
And I wondered why that was phrased that way.
But isn't that the way we all make any plan that we ever make?
Lord willing.
I think it's the same.
He wrote that from Isle of Patmos. That John had wrote this while he was on the Isle of Patmos. If that was the case, he's maybe wanting to get there, but he knows he's locked in.
Yeah.
He's not going to be on that island.
Some think that this happens before he's sent to the Isle of Patmos, and that he may be writing from somewhere like Ephesus, where John is.
He may also hope that the letter itself will take care of it without him having to come, you know, or something like that, maybe by pointing it out.
Maybe, in other words,
have a change of heart.
Maybe if faithful brothers go ahead and do what they should, it's going to have an impact on the Ephesians. That's possible. Or he could get to be more cantankerous.
But these are the very things that churches split over today.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got one person.
I think these are the very, you know, this,
yeah.
But how to do the work? How the work the Lord has given his people takes the priority. So how do you, and that's the thing. They're going to go ahead. It's going to go ahead and be okay.
And it's exhausting. I mean, it is so exhausting because it's happening. The congregation doesn't kind of happening. And it wears on the people that are there, those who are wanting to try to do what they're supposed to do. But when you have one person, particularly in leadership, who just kind of wants to take the reins and run with it, almost in a bullying type of way, you know, it's kind of like my way or no way at all. You know, this is how it sounds
like you met the
obstacle. It weighs on your heart, and it's hard to keep strong and keep trudging forward.
I think Juanita has a good point. It's exhausting, isn't it, to try to keep on doing it. But you don't get the sense, though, that John thinks that Gaius is going to quit and it's a faithful thing you are doing. He's going to go on. And that's what's impressive about this to me is John thinks he can take one sheet of papyrus here, which is why people think this is a small letter, write what he wants to one guy, and regarding these three, all three of them, and he's going to take care of it until he gets there, if he can. Haley?
Yes, just by verse 7, the end of that, does he think that the opposite has not really ever.
All right, good question. And some of the commentaries take a whole lot of space debating that, whether Diotrephes is really ever been a Christian. I believe personally that this book implies that Diotrephes was a Christian, and that he most likely was a church leader, possibly even an elder in the church, who responded to the threat of 2 John 9 by letting it, or 2 John, by letting it appeal to the worst part of his nature. Remember, that letter said, if a guy comes to you and he doesn't bring the teaching of this teaching, if you receive him in your house or give him any greeting, then you take part in his wicked deeds. Well, a statement like that, taken out of balance, can appeal to, that can be the favorite. You ought to ask people sometime, what's your favorite passage? What's your favorite passage? I ran across a fellow one time down in North Arkansas who said his most favorite passage in the Bible was the one which said, if any man sins at one point, he's guilty of the whole law. How do you think that guy was to get along with it? Okay, so you can tell. So if that appeals to the personality of a guy, then my inclination, Haley, is that he probably was a Christian who John is saying is showing his true colors here by the evil that he's doing. And sometimes that life brings out those qualities. Yes.
Well, I'd like to further that thought. And then I bring into the Ephesians
denominational figure that I've dealt with this type of question. And they'll tell you that, well, this person is not demonstrating his faith. And he never knew that. And so yeah. I always kind of had an issue with that, you know.
Yeah, we have.
And I think that they try to back that up at first.
Yeah, I'm doing you a disfavor in a bit in that we've already talked about that in our first class. But long story short, I agree with what you're getting at. But in this letter, we do best if we take it to be talking to us about how we do our work for the Lord and about being welcoming to each other and supportive to each other and to regard ourselves as fellow workers with the truth and then to be enthusiastic supporters of that which is good. That's the challenge that we have. And not to let a project get to be a favorite project of one or the other of a member of the congregation so that then the project itself has a personality and then we debate that. Does it put forward the truth of the Lord and does it help do good in His cause? And Luis.
It's interesting to me the way John named those guys in that specific order. To me, it seems to be like those two, the first one, the last guy, can, through their work and example, can make this guy think that what he's doing is not right. It doesn't mean he's not a faithful person. He just likes to be famous. So the example of both of them, that guy can come back and be, well, just like Peter. Peter denied our Lord, he come back. Paul correct him when he's trying to get involved.
Both men have one common quality, and that is that they humble themselves after realizing they did the wrong thing. There's a question about whether, I like the way you put this guy liked to be famous. Mm-hmm. There's a question about whether a guy who likes to be famous is going to do that, isn't there? That's going to be the challenge for him. All right, anybody else? I've used up your time today.
It just seems to be a real good example of why we need to have more than one elder. Why there can't be one
single. Oh, that's a good point.
It always has to be most.
I wouldn't have thought of that, but boy, that's an excellent observation, isn't it? What if you just had one and he was the opposite? Yeah.
It's a good idea to always keep in mind who is your ultimate authority in everything.
Yes.
And always, I mean, it's not. I run on autopilot a lot, and it's a good idea to get off the autopilot now and then and right. Analyze what I'm really thinking.
All right. I thank you for that point. And you got the one big thing about this mm-hmm. that I want you guys. You don't envision in this letter the thought that since there are difficult personalities in this picture, the Lord's work is given up. That's not. Right, I'm going to give you some homework now. Y'all are good, great at homework, aren't you? If you remember by the time we get through church today that you even have homework, this will be remarkable. All right, next week we're going to conclude our discussion of these three letters. And what I want you to do, all right, 1 John. Here's the problem of my personal assurance. All right? Am I assured that I have life? We looked at the tests about how that's to be decided. In 2 John, we've got the presence of people who teach things that contradict the truth of Christ, who have gone onward and don't abide in the doctrine of Christ, and they're vocal about it.
And Third John, we've got the situation where there are people who don't want to let other people do the Lord's work. Other people who like to have the preeminence and don't want to surrender. Here's your homework. In which one of these areas do you face the bigger challenge to your faith surviving, and why?
What was the first one? I'm
writing down. All right. First one, first John is your own assurance. All right. Challenges to your own assurance. Second John are those who promote things that have gone onward and left the doctrine of Christ behind. Third John is people who are difficult to work with and who love to have the freedom. Which one is the greater challenge to your faith surviving all the way to the end, and why? And how are we going to avoid letting that why rule? All right. That's how we'll finish this up. Thank you guys much for being with us today.